ढोढ़ाये पुष्पवंतो चित्रो सन्नोत मौनतम। We have been discussing from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita the subject matter or the subject matter of the spiritual master. Within our Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, there are two initiations given to the aspiring devotee. The first is the Harinam Diksha. This is when the spiritual master, after carefully observing the sincerity of the disciple, traditionally for at least 1 year, the disciple chants the holy name of the Lord with a regular discipline according to a particular vow. Within our tradition, either 16 rounds minimum, and following the four regulative principles, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. When the spiritual master sees that the disciple has been following these vows, and also has assumed the consciousness of obedience to the Guru, obedience in the service of the Guru, then the spiritual master awards the Harinam initiation. And what takes place at this time is there is a formal link between the Guru and the disciple. The disciple is then eternally connected to the disciplic succession of all previous Acharyas and Vaishnavas. And in this way, he is formally part of this family, a spiritual family. Within the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, it is a spiritual hereditary link. There are many disciplic lines throughout the world, especially here in India, that are based on blood relations. For instance, there is the Goswami caste. Or on the basis of being the child, you are initiated and given the position of the Acharya. And in the Goswami caste, you can be initiated, but you cannot initiate unless you are part of the bloodline, like the Nityananda bumps, the Advaita bumps. They initiate thousands and thousands of souls. But you cannot be a guru, you cannot initiate unless you are part of their family, part of the descendants of Lord Nityananda, part of the descendants of Sri Advaita. But we do not, also, of course, in the temples of Vrindavan, the Radha Raman Mandir, Radha Damodar Mandir, Radha Govindaji Mandir, there are the Goswamis who take the deity worship, the seva, puja. And who those people are, of course, they're obviously not descendants of Gopal Bhatta Goswami or Rupa Goswami or Sanatana Goswami, because they never married. Nityananda Prabhu married. Advaita married. So the people in their line who are initiated are direct descendants. But of the Goswamis, they're original disciples. Many of them were grihasthas, and they married. And when they had children, they gave the seva rites to their children, who gave to their children, to their children, to their children, to this day. And those pujaris who have the seva rites are also generally the gurus of that mission, and they also initiate. Also in other, like in Harivam Sampradaya, the descendants of Haribams, they're the only ones allowed to worship Radha Ballava, and they are also the only ones allowed to initiate, to be guru. But in the line that we follow, we do not have any such hereditary connection in the lines of blood or family relations. But it is a connection that has continuity on the basis of spirit, the spirit of bhakti, the spirit of grasping the essence. And as we were discussing the other day, Radha Krishna was asking a question, and Tattva, Shamananda, that there appears to be some gaps within our disciplic lines of who is listed. And just like they were saying, Baladev Vidyabhushan and then Jagannath Das Babaji, there's over 100 years between them. There's several generations where there were initiating spiritual masters between them, but they're not listed. They're not listed so much because, for two reasons. One is that they were not given so much importance because they may have been very pure in themselves, but they never, those particular gurus did not really contribute so much to the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And another thing is this. We find Baladev Vidyabhushan, who was not even initiated in our direct sampradaya, but he's one of the acharyas. Why? Because he captured the spirit. Although he wasn't initiated, by meeting Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he so deeply captured the spirit of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. He so much, from the core of his heart, just grasped the essence of Rupa and Sanatana's teachings. So our disciplic succession is based on the spirit of bhakti and nothing else. We do not consider what family one was born in. Haridas Thakur was born in a Muslim family, but he captured the spirit of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy and his teachings. And therefore, he is the Namacharya for all of us. And we bow down and accept him as one of our great forefathers. So, in this line, we are accepting a spiritual master. And the disciple should be aware that the bona fide spiritual master is one who is grasping the essence of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he is also presenting that essence. One should have not even the slightest hesitation to accept a Shudra or an untouchable, as far as family, as a guru, if that person has captured the essence of the teaching. Yesterday we were discussing the life of Narottam Das Thakur. It was his disappearance day. Did you ever hear the story of how Narottam Das disappeared from this world? Narottam Das Thakur, he lived a long life. All of the 6 Goswamis, they had left this planet. His dearmost friend, Srinivasa Acharya, had left the planet. His very, very confidential associate, Ramachandra Kaviraj, he also left the planet. And Narottam Das Thakur, who wrote that beautiful song, Jaya Nilo Premadana, he was just always in lamentation and separation from the Vaishnavas, but simultaneously always experiencing the greatest joy. But he was constantly under attack by the caste Brahmins, because as I explained, he was from the Kayasta community, very wealthy, landowners, but considered of the Shudra class. And he had so many thousands of disciples, and many of them were very, very highly qualified Brahmins. One of them, for instance, Ganga Narayan Chakravarti, he was a very learned scholar and coming from a very stalwart Brahmin family. And Ramachandra Kaviraj was also very, very high birth, very highly recognized person. And they were the obedient, humble servants surrendered to Narottam Das. So when Narottam was very, very old, and he saw that it was time for him to wrap up his earthly leela, one day he asked his disciples to take him to the river Ganges. In the Narottam Vilas by Narahari, this story is explained. So he went to the Ganga, and he told his disciples to build a funeral pyre for him. So they took the wood and they stacked it and made all the arrangements, decorated it very nicely, a fitting funeral pyre for their guru. And while they were doing it, their hearts were breaking in pain, they were shedding tears, but they had to follow the order of their guru. And then Narottam just sat quietly and went into trance for 3 days. Did not say a word, and his disciples just sat and watched. And after 3 days, all of his lice symptoms stopped. He left his body. So at that time, they lifted his body, they put it on the funeral pyre, they began to have their services, the last rites for their Guru Maharaj. And then the caste Brahmins, they heard of this and they came, and they started blaspheming terribly. This guru of yours, so-called guru, Shudra, he has finally met his befitting end. He's dead. He's offended the whole Brahmin class. He's offended the Shastra. And you are highly born Brahmins. And you have disgraced the name and honor of your caste by accepting a Shudra for a guru, being a servant of such a person. And they were just blaspheming terribly. So Ganga Narayan, he couldn't tolerate hearing his guru, because usually at the last day, when the last eulogies, everyone speaks nicely. In the Jewish tradition, it is said that at a person's funeral, when people speak about him during the funeral ceremony, that the soul hears that and always remembers what the people have said. Well, that's throughout all religions, there's always that ceremony where everyone speaks their heartfelt appreciations of a person before his body is either buried or burned. So this was the last words being heard. So Ganga Narayan began to weep. He couldn't tolerate that these people were so offensive. And he prayed to Narottam, please, please do something to change their hearts. This is terrible. So right at that time, Narottam, he sat up. His eyes opened. And when he did this, by the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his body became so effulgent that light just started going in all directions around him. He was brilliant. And also a beautiful golden Brahmin thread appeared on his body. And when the Brahmins saw this, they understood that this person is certainly divinely empowered by God. And the Brahmins themselves came and worshipped his feet. And Narottam, with such forgiving compassion, he embraced them all and initiated them in Harinam. And then Narottam just walked away and went to a secluded place where he just did his Nam Bhajan, immersed in his inner meditations, Radha Krishna, Leela. And several months later, he again asked his disciples to bring him to the Ganges. So they brought him to the Ganges. And then he went into the Ganges to take bath. He says, "You also come in with me." So they came in with him, and he said, "Now I want you to take the water with your hands and pour it on my body." So they took the water and started pouring it on his body. And as they were doing that, they saw his skin turn white, and it started to melt. and they kept doing it. And his body, as it was being touched by the water of the Ganges, his body was turning into milk and just merging into the Ganges. And their guru was getting smaller and smaller and smaller, littler and littler and littler. And they couldn't stop because his guru, their guru ordered him. This was his will. So as they were pouring water on his body was turning to milk and merging into the Ganges. But even more than his body, their own tears were just flowing like anything, merging into his body, into the Ganges. So there was just milk and tears just going on and on and on as an offering to Mother Ganga until finally he disappeared. And then the disciples took that milk that was in the Ganges mixed with the tears and Ganga water and put it in a big pot and brought it to a place near Khetri where he lived and built a beautiful samadhi for him. To this day that samadhi is there. It's called a Dugdha Samadhi, which means the samadhi of milk. And of course the samadhi in Vrindavan, there are different versions, but some say that part of that milk was also brought to Vrindavan to be put beside his Guru Maharaja's samadhi, Lokanath Das Goswami. So through this beautiful story we see how within the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, in its true essence, this idea of birth has very little relevance. But a guru is to be considered a guru if he has the qualities of one who has grasped the essence of the spirit of the teachings of Lord Sri Krishna. Now, upon taking Harinam initiation, there is that link with all of the acharyas, which means that in truth, all of the previous acharyas and all the previous Vaishnavas are agreeing, through the grace of your immediate spiritual master, to be overseeing your spiritual life, granting you their eternal mercy, their eternal blessings. And that link is essential to go beyond a certain point in our spiritual advancement. And to take that vow of initiation is essential. Because at that time, the spiritual master, the mantra that you chant is then and there empowered through parampara for the rest of your life until you go back to Godhead. So the chanting of the holy name has, although you may not notice it with your own senses, has greatly more potency after initiation because it is imbued with the mercy of the previous acharyas. Generally, after 1 year, we are given the Gayatri Mantra initiation. Now, of the two, the Harinam initiation has a much greater importance. The Gayatri Mantra initiation serves two purposes. One, it is a reconfirmation of the vow that we have made, or the final seal of that vow that we have made on Harinam initiation. And the giving of Gayatri Mantra is meant to help us in our chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. It is an aid. In and of itself, we do not take it so seriously. What is glorious about the Gayatri Mantra is that Krishna's name is within it. If Krishna's name was not in the Gayatri Mantra, we wouldn't care anything for it. And the Gayatri Mantra, as I was saying, it helps us in our purification. It helps us to focus our concentration and our energy on the chanting of Harinam. And it also helps us to develop more brahminical qualities, which are also aids in the chanting of Harinam. But Gayatri Mantra has limitations, and Maha Mantra has no limitations. If you give me a piece of paper, I can show you. These two mantras have in our I can use one of these. So we'll make an example like this. The Acharyas have explained it in this way. We'll make two circles. This is the lowest position. This is a position, a qualified position. We have to qualify to have this position. This is liberation. And this is Goloka Vrindavan. See? Everyone can see? So we see that this circle is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. This circle is the Gayatri Mantra. The Maha Mantra reaches down to the lowest possible position, the most degraded, sinful criminal can become purified by chanting the Maha Mantra. And the Maha Mantra will take you all the way to the highest position of Goloka Vrindavan. Whereas the Gayatri Mantra, a low sinner cannot chant the Gayatri Mantra. You have to have special qualifications to even receive the Gayatri Mantra. You have to be brahminically trained. And the Gayatri Mantra at the most can bring you to the point of liberation. Clear? So therefore, our heart, soul, and life, and full faith is in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And we give importance to the Gayatri Mantra because it is very, very, very helpful, simply in increasing our attention and our purified lifestyle by which the Maha Mantra will have a better effect. So these are the two initiations that the devotees take from the spiritual master. Now sometimes it happens, as in Srila Prabhupada's movement, that a person takes first initiation or Harinam initiation from Prabhupada. And then when Prabhupada left the planet, they took second initiation or Gayatri initiation from one of his godbrothers. So of the two, who is of more importance? In regard to the initiation, the Harinam initiating guru is always of more importance. But they are both of great importance, and they should both be given great respect. Factually, that person has two gurus. But with the understanding of the essence of what a guru is, the spirit of what a guru is, he understands that guru is one, and that when one guru has left, he is simply leaving us under the care of another. In this way. So there should be no, it's simultaneously inconceivably one and different. In the ISKCON movement, there was a tremendous amount of confusion over who's my guru. Is Prabhupada my guru, or is my godbrother who gave me the Gayatri initiation my guru, mantra? And of course, this is because devotees don't understand the real spirit and essence of what this guru parampara really is. There's no problem. There's no disunity. Is there any questions on these matters?
So the Harinam Guru is Diksha Guru?
Yes. They're both Diksha. Diksha means... Diksha is initiation. Diksha means initiation, does it not? Huh?
Yeah, the
so you're taking first and second. The Harinam Guru is giving you the Maha Mantra. The Harinam, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is what's going to take you back to Goloka Vrindavan. So therefore, yes, that is the most important diksha.
So when the Shastra says that you can have only one diksha guru, many diksha gurus, they refer to the fact that two people cannot give you the Harinam diksha.
Yes, you can't be changing gurus. It's very offensive.
Then why should a bona fide guru accept me to give this session to a guru, a disciple who has already taken Harinam?
If that guru is in a fallen state, he's no longer in a capacity of guru, then he may do it. But if he's not in a fallen state, it's offensive to do it. If that person simply is not capable of uplifting his disciple, then it is...
Guru gives Harinam Diksha to a disciple of some other guru, then it's an indication of what the second guru thinks of, or judgment he makes of the first.
Either that person is not in a bona fide disciplic succession. Under that case, you should initiate such a person. Or the person is in a fallen condition, where he's no longer in the capacity of a guru, then he can be reinitiated. But that should be done with much consideration. Any other questions? That's not true. They're not necessarily. Sometimes they are. Many have been. Many of the six Goswamis have been cremated. Because you see Krishna Das Kaviraj, because at the time the Muslims were digging up the graves of the samadhis, just as they were destroying the deities and defiling the bodies. So Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, all of these people, they were cremated. And then their ashes were put in the samadhi, so that the Muslims could not defile them. Generally, if a person, just like Narayan Maharaj was telling me, if a sannyasi leaves his body, if that sannyasi has some land, then they make a samadhi for him. But if he has no land, what are they going to do with his body? Huh? They burn his body and put his ashes in the river.
Even they put the body in the river, there's no piece of land.
Not a sannyasi's body. They'd never do that. According to the Brahminical culture, that's the worst offense you can offer a person. That's what they said to do with Haridas Thakur after he died. They said, don't burn him, don't bury him. If you put him in the river, then his soul will find no resting place anywhere. That's considered a great disgrace, to just throw a body in the river. No, he buried it. He bathed it in the sea. Then he took it on the land and personally with his own hands dug the hole and placed it and then buried it with his own hands. Haridas Thakur's body is personally put there. But I'm talking about when the first time he died, before he rose from the dead, when the executioners beat him through the 22 marketplaces, and they couldn't kill him. So when he saw that they were troubled by his not dying, he died. So then the caste Brahmins and the mullahs who hated him, they were wondering what to do. He's a Muslim, he should be buried. The Hindus are saying he's a Hindu, should be burnt. But as far as we're concerned, he's not worthy of being a Hindu, he shouldn't be burnt. And the Muslim's saying he's not worthy of being a Muslim, he shouldn't be buried. We should punish him by throwing him in the water, because according to the smarter principles of the Brahmins and the Mullahs, that if the body is not rested, either through ashes or through the ground, then the soul finds no resting place anywhere. So they threw him in the water as a punishment. Of course, then he came back to life, rose from the dead, and started preaching again. Generally, a Paramahamsa is put in samadhi for the purpose of what? In spirit, the real reason is so that people could get inspired from that person and visit his samadhi for all time to come. And also to honor that particular body, because it is a holy spiritual body. But it's not that they cannot be burnt. Oftentimes, it's just a matter of what is practical, according to time and circumstance. Generally, a sannyasi is never burnt, but he has no land, and no one wants to give him land, he's supposed to be burnt.
What are the people that throw the body in the Ganges River?
What?
They throw the body in the Ganga River.
Who does?
Most of the people do.
What people?
One who follows this Indian tradition, they throw the body in the river.
Ashes.
Yeah, body in the body also. It's not proper.
They put some stone in. Even Bhakti Yoga Maharaj was saying that in Rishikesh, in some of the sampradayas, their spiritual masters, they are given jal samadhi. They are immersed in Ganges.
There are different interpretations. This is a ritualistic idea. We're not really so concerned what you do with the body. The body's dead. It's not a very important thing. According to some smarter Brahmins, that's what they said about Haridas Thakur. We consider that bogus too. We consider it totally bogus that if anybody's body is thrown in the river, that their soul finds no resting place. That is all just smarter tradition. The real thing is what a person has done to his life. And different traditions have different ways. The Parsis feed the body to birds. What difference does it make? The idea of putting your body of a saint in a special place is so that people could come to worship that person. What you do with the body is not in any way going to influence the destination of the soul. If that person is a pure devotee, you could feed his body to lions, you could give his body to a rakshasa. Doesn't make any difference. That person's soul is going back to Godhead if he's a Paramahamsa, whatever you do. There are different traditions. Within our tradition, we either burn or we bury. There are other religions with other traditions. It's a detail. Yes?
If there's a person who is already initiated in one sampradaya, and then he is inspired by somebody and then wants to stay, and maybe he wants to get initiated, then is it only reconfirmation of that or just...
If that sampradaya that he's already been initiated is a bona fide Vaishnav sampradaya, then there's no question of taking another initiation, unless he wants to be a gross offender to God and that whole disciplical line and all the acharyas of the line that he's rejecting. He can receive upon the blessing of his guru, he could receive inspiration and shiksha or instruction from another sampradaya, but not reinitiation. This process is just the process of following the ways of the mind, because in due course of time he'll want to take initiation from some other sampradaya, then some other sampradaya. Whoever inspires you, you want to just surrender. The mind will always find somebody who inspires you a little more, a little more, a little more. Why? Then you don't have to surrender to anybody. If you want to make spiritual advancement, you have a guru, he's a bona fide guru, he's repeating the word of Krishna. Whoever inspires you, your loyalty, your allegiance, your surrender must be to one. Otherwise, the whole process is just sense gratification. Do you understand? Just surrendering to your mind. Oh, I've taken initiation, but I just heard this person. He's inspiring me more than my guru. I'll surrender to him. I guarantee you 100% that in a few years somebody's going to inspire you more than him. Huh? And then after a few years, after you become a little familiar with him, somebody's going to inspire you with something different, and it's going to be a higher rasa than what you have now. And this way, throughout your life, you'll never surrender to anybody. The scriptures, the acharyas, they condemn this idea. To get inspiration and shiksha, anyone who can give us that spirit of Krishna will accept it. But our surrender and obedience must be to one. Or those who are in harmony with that one.
I had a discussion with one of the persons while preaching, and he was asking if the super soul is seated in the heart and it is guiding from within. Of course, it is a must that you should take, but is it possible that without taking formal initiation from anything, you can still become completely self-realized?
What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? That's there, but what else in regard to hearing the super soul in your heart? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mamupayantate. For those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give direction from within. Are you on the level? Is this person you're talking to on the level of being constantly devoted and worshiping Krishna with love? If you're not on that level, you have no connection directly with the super soul within your heart. You have to accept the external manifestation of super soul, the spiritual master. The super soul himself is speaking. Who knows better, you or him? Huh? The super soul that you're talking about is saying, for those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the direction from within. And we're saying that I have super soul and I can hear him? If you're constantly devoted and worship him with love, you don't even need a guru in the first place. Huh? But who's on that platform? Therefore, everyone must have a guru. When you are constantly devoted and worshiping with love, after rigorous, strenuous training under the external manifestation of Super Soul, the Guru, then gradually you come to that platform of being constantly devoted and worshiping with love. And in that state, you're so indebted to your Guru for giving you that, you remain his eternal obedient servant. So in all levels, you always need a Guru. Huh? So this is all just sahajya, just taking things so cheaply. Yes. Ritvik and Shiksha? The difference is in formal position. In spirit, one who's inspiring you to surrender to Krishna is Guru. The Shiksha Guru is one who is giving instruction, who is guiding you. The inspiring you. The Ritvik Guru has a very formal place besides being a Shiksha Guru. And that is that he is giving that formal initiation on behalf of the Supreme Guru of your life. Huh? Therefore, there is a formal connection with him just as there is with your Diksha Guru. And when and if the Diksha Guru leaves the planet, the Ritvik Guru becomes fully your guru. You become his disciple with all formalities. A shiksha guru doesn't have those formal, we do not have such formal vows and responsibilities to an ordinary shiksha guru. So the formal position of a Ritvik guru must be taken very seriously. Not true. Who do you mean by the Gaudiya Math? Prabhupada and Chaitanya Charitamrita, even in the phases of Chaitanya Charitamrita, it explains that the Gayatri Mantra can bring you to liberation. It's in Adi Lila. I can find it later. And the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra can bring you to Goloka Vrindavan, to pure love of God, the lotus feet of Krishna. And Prabhupada very much stressed that Harinam is, he gives the name, you take the vows at Harinam. Narayan Maharaj, Sridhar Maharaj, Sridhar Maharaj in his books, he says the ultra importance is in Harinam first initiation. He's also Gaudiya Math. I've spoken to him about it. He explains it in the same way. It's confirmation. But Harinam is complete in itself. Harinam is complete in itself. It's a reconfirmation that you take because the guru, because if you are actually a true disciple, you'll be willing to accept whatever will help you to progress properly on the spiritual path.
Supposing in this lifetime we are not able to go to back to God, although we have taken a decision to service the Guru, and what is the next part?
You begin where you left off.
What about the Guru in the next part?
The Guru will continue guiding you in your spiritual life. How he guides you, you may not be able to understand. It will obviously not be in the same physical form. But on a spiritual level, his blessings will always be there, and his guidance, and his overseeing you. And he may appear in another physical form personally, or he may be directing another jivatma in a position of a guru to help you. Vilva Mangala Thakur, his guru spoke through a prostitute named Chintamani to bring him back to the spiritual path. And Vilva Mangala Thakur, who is a Paramahamsa, who understands things very clearly as they are,